Good afternoon, everyone. It is 3:01 p.m. on Saturday, May 9th, 2020. This is a special meeting of the Board of Directors of the Kensington Fire Protection District. And I am going to call the meeting to order by calling roll. Director Domer is, as far as I can tell, not in attendance yet. Director Kosel will not be able to attend. Director Nagel.
Here.
Director Padian.
I'm here.
And I'm here, Julie Stein. So welcome everyone. We have, already 28 members of the public, in addition to our panelists attending. So this meeting is being held via Zoom webinar. I'd like to remind everyone that this is a special meeting, which means that the public is welcome to comment, but you must confine your comments to items on the agenda. So the item that we have on the agenda today is a report on traffic patterns and load on the streets of Kensington and adjacent areas in the event of an evacuation. And this presentation has been prepared by our traffic consultants, Stephen Wong, Ian Martin, and Jeremy Halpern. And it's being presented by Stephen Wong. So what I'm going to do is turn it over to Director Padian and Director Nagel to introduce the presentation. And we will get started.
Larry, go ahead.
I don't really have anything, Kevin. You can take it.
Well, I think people have had the traffic report on our website for several months now. We've all been very pleased at the detail and the rigor and the exhaustiveness given the scope of the project. And it has been very useful for us because in addition to the full report, we've got an executive summary that takes some of the 42 recommendations and the general perspective and methods and just condenses them and gives us an idea of where to go. Everybody should understand that, because obviously all our panelists understand, that Kensington as an unincorporated area is part of the county. The county owns all the roads and controls the traffic. And so in looking at these this report and making sense of it, trying to interpret it and filtering out its recommendations, we are very mindful that we need the complete cooperation of our police and fire, as well as of our county officials to implement most of the recommendations that have been made concerning the streets, the traffic, the parking, and their configurations and what to do. And so we want to be very mindful of that. And this report is a tremendous first step in getting us on our way. And that's all I'd like to say. I'm going to turn it over to Stephen and Ian and Jeremy. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. So my name is Stephen Wong. I'm a doctoral candidate at UC Berkeley. I'll be doing this presentation along with Ian Martin, who's currently at MTA at New York City Transit. And Jeremy Halpern, who's also part of the team, will be helping us with the Q&A. And so I'll just go ahead and go through the presentation. I'm going to stop my video just so that I don't happen to see myself the whole time, because that can be very challenging, to say the least. So we're going to present our Kensington Evacuation Research Project. We're going to, if I can click through here, there we go. The outline of our presentation, we're going to be talking about a summary of the tasks, as well as the field study that we conducted on Kensington streets. We'll then be going through a network analysis as well, and then wrapping up with recommendations and eventually with questions and general comments from the public that have been submitted prior and can also be discussed after the presentation. Oh, sorry about that. So the team here, again, my name is Stephen Wong. I'm a doctoral candidate at UC Berkeley. I'm joined by Ian Martin, who's a staff analyst at MTA, and Jeremy Halpern, who's an equity analyst at MTC. Together, we were at UC Berkeley all at the same time, and I'm the only one still left, but thankfully, Ian and Jeremy have graciously decided to come back and help us out with the presentation, so I want to thank them for that. All right, so the summary of tasks that we will be talking about today and our role that we had as consultants. So our first phase was in summer of 2019. Our first task was to define the evacuation problem statement for Kensington, and along with that, review local emergency and evacuation preparedness guides and plans that included Oakland, El Cerrito, Richmond, Orinda, Lafayette, Moraga, a lot of the neighboring jurisdictions to see how they provided their evacuation plans to the public and what it contained. I also conducted a review on academic literature on wildfire evacuations to get some additional recommendations. And then our next major task was to document a data protocol for a field survey of Kensington street conditions. And that went straight into phase two in fall 2019, where we analyzed the street condition data from the field survey of Kensington streets. We provide a methodology and also results for a network analysis of Kensington. This is not a full-scale traffic model. I want to be clear on that. This is a network analysis, but it presents a good starting point for Kensington with regards to a wildfire evacuation. We also identified critical intersections, road links, and gathering points for evacuations, and finished out with providing recommendations for developing a Kensington evacuation plan. All this will be covered today in the presentation. So the first part is the field study. I'm going to introduce it and then hand it off to Ian to talk about the results that we got from it. So our field study, we went on every single Kensington street, which is many. It was doable, but it was many. And the field study methodology was to think about a worst case scenario for a wildfire. And our worst case scenario that we thought would be the most prevalent for us, where we would need the most number of people to evacuate from Kensington, would be if residents were at home at night and cars were all parked on the street. And so we gathered our data from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. and from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. And so those were the windows. You actually may have seen us out there. And if you did, I hope you said hi and were a friendly face. And so we conducted this from Monday through Thursday. We didn't want to use weekends because the number of people in Kensington drops a little bit on weekends as people travel. Of course, that's probably not the case right now, but at least during this fall of 2019 data collection, that's what we wanted to focus on. And then finally, we didn't collect any data on red flag days or holidays because there was going to be changes in how people were parked on the street or if they were even present in their residences. So this is a couple pictures of in the field. That's Jeremy as he's measuring the street width. And so we were out there very, very early in the morning. Ian is on the right over there. Looks like he's marking down some information on the iPad to get some, to document all the data. So with that, I'm gonna hand it over to Ian, and Ian is going to talk a little bit about the results that we had for the field study.
Thanks, Stephen. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes,
you're good. So for the field survey, we basically, as Stephen said, we walked almost every street segment in Kensington and took down a variety of different data points, primarily relating to the width of the right-of-way. The big thing here was sort of documenting the usable area of the street that could be used for through traffic during an evacuation, with an eye toward which streets could support two-way traffic, particularly between emergency vehicles. One of the things that I wanted to do to introduce this, one of the pieces of data that we took down was the center lines on the roads. So this is just, do the roads have a marked center line or not? And we kind of used this as a proxy for laying out where we think some of the current major routes are, just based on, existing wayfinding. So these are the roads with some that are marked at all. Pretty much every, most of the streets in Kensington don't have centerline markings. But what you can see here is sort of the major roads. So Colusa, Arlington, and Grizzly Peak definitely have are marked, as well as some of these east-west roads, such as Coventry and Kenyon and a couple of the others. So from our perspective, in an evacuation right now, these are roads that people are likely to be using. And I think something that we can talk about a little bit more in the recommendations is the importance of wayfinding, that, you know, in a emergency scenario, even people who are pretty familiar with the area could become disoriented. So it's, you know, having good wayfinding, either in the form of sort of marking out which roads are major roads, as well as signage, is, I think, something we're going to want to talk about. Next slide. So we measured street width in a bunch of different ways for each street segment. So between intersections, we measured the maximum and minimum width of the street. We also did a number of other measurements, which I'll get to in a moment. So the first measurement that we have for street width is just the minimum width of the street. So this is the minimum lane width. Originally, we started with a number of that this, you know, our threshold was 20 feet and under for a two-way street, because this would allow two emergency vehicles to pass one another. But we ran into some issues because of the fact that Arlington has these two, you know, sort of single, you know, one-way travel segments. So we changed this into a lane width where we're saying we want at least 10 feet of lane width to say that you could consider supporting two-way traffic. And then, you know, really you'd probably want more than that to be able to do it at any kind of speed. So the lane, what you can see here, this is just the minimum width on each segment. So at some point on each of these segments, this is where the minimum width range is. So basically what this says is that, you know, any of the streets in red, there's at least one point in the segment where it's effectively a one lane road. For if you get up to the yellow, you might be able to get like cars past emergency vehicles at slow speeds. And then into the green is where you can start to support more, a little bit more free flowing traffic. Get the next slide. So one thing that we ran into with measuring street widths is, you know, on many roads, we could just measure from curb to curb. So on a street like Colusa, for example. But many of the roads, particularly further up on the hill, have these drainage gutters. And we had to make a judgment call in each case as to whether a vehicle could actually use the drainage gutter as part of the roadway. And the metric we used here was essentially if we felt that it could be navigated by a typical car. So, you know, things that only looked like they'd be navigable by a pickup truck, we generally did not count. But we did count things that may still pose challenges to a vehicle with very low ground clearance. So one thing that also helped in deciding what could be driven in and what couldn't is a lot of these gutters are crossed by driveways. And we noticed a couple different typologies of this. There's a lot of locations where the driveways just cut straight across. So in the left picture, and these we almost universally, you know, felt that that couldn't be used as part of the roadway. It's too much of an obstacle for vehicles to be going up and over those. We did notice some cases, such as in the middle picture, where there's sort of these sloped edges where, you know, at a low enough speed, a vehicle could probably traverse this or be pulled over to the side to let another vehicle by. And then something else we noticed in a couple of locations is sort of these drainage grates, is sort of in the right-hand picture, which allow, you know, the gutter to still carry water, but present a level surface for vehicles. Next slide. So, you know, and that, just to give some examples of some of the narrower streets. So, you know, in general, the southeastern part of Kensington tended to have narrower roads to start. And then a lot of these were further narrowed by drainage gutters and a lot of parked vehicles. So this is Cambridge Avenue looking north. The curb to curb width of the street is 20 feet. So even if the whole street could be used, it'd still be, you know, difficult to get two large vehicles past each other. This is further narrowed to about 18 feet by the deep drainage gutters, and then all the way down to 11 feet by the parked vehicles. You can get the next slide. So the minimum street width is sort of the, you know, at some point on this segment, there is a very narrow spot. But we also wanted to look at sort of how much of the segment is narrow and why is it narrow. So the pinch points are, we counted the number of points on two-way streets where the street width was below 20 feet. And on a one-way segment, we would look at if it was below 10 feet. So what this is sort of indicating is the approximate percentage of the length of the roadway that's at under 20 feet of width. And we generally, since most of the locations where there was some kind of a pinch point, it was due to a parked vehicle or something of that nature, we sort of, in creating this measurement, which we did this as a percentage so that it would sort of equally compare the short street segments and the long street segments, because some of these segments are much longer than others. So we used a length of about 15 feet, which is a sort of typical passenger car for what one pinch point would be. And then in some cases, the street was really never wider than, there was never 20 feet to work with. And we just sort of classified the whole segment as being under 20 feet. So this is looking at sort of all the red is more than 50% of the segment is, less than 20 feet, which is really sort of not supporting two-way traffic. And so, you know, in comparison with the minimum width segments, something that's notable is there were segments that had low minimum widths, but if you look at the percent of the roadway that's less than that width, it's not that much. So it basically is saying, you know, there are some obstructions, but there aren't many of them, at least based on the survey that we could do. So that this is just kind of trying to get at a point of, you know, how numerous are these obstructions, and, you know, if it's one spot, maybe that's something that could be dealt with, but if it's the whole street, then it's something that's really not going to support two-way traffic. So next slide. So an example of some pinch points, so a lot of these were narrow segments that are further narrowed by parked vehicles. So this is on Lennox Road. Between Beverly and Kingston, sort of near the intersection with the public path number 5. So at this point, you know, the roadway width is already fairly narrow. And when you add in the parked vehicles, it gets down to about 11 feet, which really can, you know, that would allow traffic in one direction at relatively low speed. Most of these pinch points are caused by parked vehicles, but there are some cases where it's due to other obstructions. I think there's a spot on Norwood where there's a telephone pole that narrows the street by quite a lot. There's also a segment on Los Altos where there's sort of a embankment or retaining wall where there's sort of an extended area of narrow road without any parked vehicles. Next slide. So as I was saying, you know, sort of there's the three ways we measured road width. There's sort of the minimum width of the street. There's the percent of the street that's under 20 feet. And then we also wanted to look at the percent of the street length that contains parked vehicles. So for every segment that we measured, we counted the number of cars parked on each side of the street. This is kind of the pessimistic measure in which we added both the cars parked on the left side and the right side together. Which assumes that basically no cars are parked directly across from each other. And then normalize that by the length of the segment. Again, using about 15 feet as the typical length for a vehicle. So one thing that this shows is, you know, a thing about this set measurement that's a little different from the others is that it actually, you know, there's a couple of cases, the over 50% cases tend to fall on streets like Calusa, which actually don't have a lot of obstructions, but because they're so wide, there's parking allowed on both sides of the street. So they tended to have more cars per length, despite the fact that the road is wide enough to support two-way traffic. Meanwhile, some of the streets in the southeastern part of Kensington, which are extremely narrow, already don't allow parking on one side of the street. So there's fewer cars per street length relative to some of the other parts of the area. Another notable thing here is that most streets never exceeded 50% of the street length occupied by parked vehicles. And that's because since this is mostly a residential area, there are a lot of driveways and those break up the, you know, you could figure that even if most of the street length is covered by parked cars, those are still interrupted by driveways between them. So next slide. So another thing that we looked at in addition to the three width measurements is the vegetation. So we kind of, for each segment, we did a sort of a low, medium, and high on underbrush and smaller plants, as well as a low, medium, and high on tree cover. And this definitely has some, you know, it was just based on subjective observation and a little bit of probably variance from different nights of observation. But in general, what we were trying to capture here, you know, if we're looking at a segment is, you know, how much the, you know, the ability to use this roadway segment would be impacted if, you know, for one, a lot of the vegetation were to be on fire, or if, especially in the case of trees, if those trees were, you know, if they were to fall down, would they block the roadway entirely? And how difficult would they be to clear? So, you know, generally, if I think we have some examples on the next slide. So a low tree cover, low underbrush, sort of the northern end of Grizzly Peak Boulevard here is an example. There's really no overhanging trees. There's not a lot of underbrush. One thing that we looked at, you know, gave a little bit more attention to with underbrush is underbrush beneath trees that could serve as a ladder for fire. So here you can see there's not a lot of brush, not a lot of overhanging trees. A medium segment would be kind of like the middle, which is on Kenyon Avenue, and sort of some mid-sized trees, but only on one side of the street, and not a lot of, you know, some underbrush, but not too much, not a ton. This rating we also gave to some streets where, you know, there's sort of very low, full, you know, sort of vegetation at one end of the street and a lot at the other. So we tried to kind of figure out what the middle ground was there. And then an example of sort of high tree cover, high underbrush is on Yale Avenue here. Sort of tree, you know, tree hanging, overhanging most of the roadway, a fair amount of underbrush underneath the trees. And also, you know, sort of compounded by the fact that the roadway here is pretty narrow to begin with. So next slide. Something else that we looked at were inclines. This is mostly looking at for getting heavy vehicles or emergency vehicles up hills. If there were streets that might pose more difficulty to them than others. This was also a subjective measurement taken just by observation. In general, this shows that there's, you know, for every path that is steep, there's generally an alternative path that is less steep. And this could help in maybe prioritizing which routes want to be favored for uphill emergency vehicles versus focusing maybe some of the steeper segments toward downhill traffic. You know, I'd say that, you know, most of the, even things that we are classifying as steep, probably could be traversed by emergency vehicles, but it's just another consideration in the planning for this. Next slide. So we also took a look at intersections, particularly at the traffic control devices at intersections. So that's stop signs, yield signs, traffic signals. There are only a couple of traffic signals in the study area. So we did include Calusa Avenue at the western edge because we felt, you know, even though we weren't sure if the entirety of the street lies within Kensington or El Cerrito, we felt that it was important for our sort of understanding of the area. So the only true traffic signal is at the intersection of El Cerrito or Calusa Avenue and Fairmount. And then there's also a pedestrian beacon on Arlington Avenue. There's a couple of all-way stop signs at various locations throughout Kensington, a couple of what we're calling partial stops or partial yields where one of the streets has a yield sign or a stop sign. But the majority of the intersections we saw have no traffic control at all. And from an evacuation planning perspective, the uncontrolled intersections pose some challenges because if there's not clear right-of-way rules and there's heavy traffic, it could be difficult for people to get out of side streets onto major evacuation routes. But at the same time, the presence of stop signs or all-way stop signs could pose challenges for moving traffic through them without having someone directing traffic. So next slide. So some examples, in addition to the traffic control, we also kept a lookout for unconventional intersections. One that we note in the report is the intersection of Grizzly Peak and Spruce and Cannon Drive. It's sort of the southeastern corner of Kensington. But one we note here is Arlington and Sunset Drive. So in this case, if you're traveling northbound on Arlington and you need to turn left on Sunset, you essentially kind of drive up the southbound side of Arlington for a short distance before continuing onto Sunset. And this seemed to work fine, when we observed it. But our concerns with this are mostly that if in an evacuation, if there's a lot of traffic moving south on Arlington Avenue, and at the same time, there's some traffic trying to get onto Sunset to get down the hill into El Cerrito, that there could be a lot of conflict points here, but the left-turning traffic wouldn't be able to get through. Particularly, I think we'll talk later on about the use of the cemetery as an egress path. And if that is put into use, then Sunset will become an even more important route for sending traffic, and that would push even more traffic through probably both branches of this intersection. So next slide. In addition to looking at all the roadways and the intersections, we also did a walking survey of all the walking paths. We compiled a list of walking paths, both from what we could find on Google Maps as well as the Kensington Pathkeepers site. We found sort of a range of conditions. In general, we found that in the northeastern part of Kensington, or the southeastern part, I'm sorry, of Kensington, the paths were generally more trail-like. They were less likely to be paved, with the exception of this segment on the left going up from Arlington Avenue. And generally were narrower, had more vegetation. This is kind of progressing up the hill from Arlington. You sort of start with these concrete stairs, but then it progresses to wooden stairs with a decent amount of overhanging vegetation, and then essentially to a trail-like condition once you get up toward Westminster. So next slide. In contrast to the southeastern area part of Kensington, we found that the southwestern part, the paths were more likely to be paved. In fact, some of these are step free, which means they could be used by people with mobility devices. But with one exception of the public path number one, going from Marchant Court down to Coventry Road, which is again more trail-like in nature. But the rest of the paths are generally paved. Some of them do have stairs, but are generally paved more free of vegetation than the ones in the southeastern quadrant. So next slide. So in the course of the field survey, we also kept a lookout for things that are currently not public thoroughfares that could be used as alternate routes, either for evacuees or as alternate routes to allow emergency vehicles to travel uphill and avoid conflicts with downhill traffic. So the first and most important of these is probably the Sunset View Cemetery, which essentially provides a straight route from Sunset Drive all the way down into the flatland portion of El Cerrito. This route can be made right now by going over to Eureka Avenue, but this would definitely open up a shorter path for a lot of Kensington to get down onto the flatlands. Another one we noticed is this closed segment of Kensington Park Road, which is currently protected by bollards between the community center and the school. This does have a steep segment on it, but could provide an alternate uphill route. There's also some paths that could be driven sort of between the end of Windsor Avenue and the community center. But these could also provide egress routes for people on foot, even if they aren't used for emergency vehicles or vehicular traffic. And lastly, there is this EB Mud access road between Beloit Avenue and Spruce Street in Berkeley. Kind of goes around the other side of, I think it's the Sunset Reservoir there, or the Summit Reservoir. And this probably, you know, unless Grizzly Peak Boulevard wasn't able to be used for some reason, probably wouldn't be as good of an evacuation route, but it could provide an alternate route for emergency vehicles that could allow Grizzly Peak Boulevard to be devoted solely to evacuees. So next slide. And one last thing that we were asked to do as part of the study was to identify some potential gathering points. In general, you know, the recommendation would be that most of these, you know, that people should get closer toward El Cerrito and toward the bay, you know, closer to there. Some of these are fairly close to the wildland urban interface, which for certain situations may not be advisable. But we're basically looking for large open areas without a lot of vegetation. So we were looking at the Summit Reservoir or the large intersection of Grizzly Peak and Spruce adjacent to it, the Hilltop Elementary School, the Recreation Center, sort of the business district at the intersection of Arlington and Amherst Avenue, Calusa Circle, or the intersection of Calusa Avenue and Fairmount at the bottom of the cemetery. And these could all be locations either as, you know, intermediate gathering points, places that people could evacuate on foot to be picked up by higher capacity vehicles. Sort of very situation dependent though. And again, we would recommend the further west, the better in most cases. Next slide. Great. So I'm going to hand it back to Stephen now to talk about the network analysis.
Thanks, Ian. I really appreciate it. That was great. So we're going to go into the network analysis. Jeremy did a lot of work on this, so he'll be probably answering a lot of the questions related to it, but I'll be presenting it for now. And so I do want to stress that this network analysis is not a full-scale traffic simulation. And so if you really wanted to understand the dynamics and the congestion that may come from this over a period of time, you would want to conduct a full-scale traffic modeling exercise, which is very time-consuming and very expensive, and also hard to do in terms of coding. So instead, we were asked to do a network analysis. And what this really means is we call it a closest facility model, so it is just a shortest path. An individual is generated from, or you could think of it as a vehicle or an agent is generated at one of these nodes, and their goal is to get to their nearest exit as quickly as possible, and it's based on a shortest path along the roadways. We can simulate the population by assuming different vehicles per household generated to all these different nodes. There are 158 nodes in Kensington. So again, because we're doing this network analysis, it's not a nice even distribution across road segments, but we still think that this is a good indication of where we might see significant congestion during an evacuation. We also conducted 9 scenarios. We did a local versus regional. I'll explain this in a bit. We did a local versus regional. We did an open cemetery versus closed cemetery, and that's Sunset View. So we wanted to see how that would change the patterns and the behavior of the individuals. And then we also did a very brief north fire slash south fire scenario. And again, this is not completely comprehensive because this would require a traffic model to do so. But we still think this is a great indication for Kensington on where they might see some problems moving forward. So the local evacuation analysis. So if you look on the map to the right, All the blue boxes are egress points. In this local evacuation analysis, we basically assumed that people are trying to exit Kensington, and once they have exited Kensington, then they're removed from the model. And so people are trying to find the fastest route to these different egress points. And so we generated all these vehicles. We assumed about 2 vehicles per household. Now, of course, this assumption can change. If people are taking less vehicles, we'll of course see less number of vehicles for each of these links. If people take more vehicles, of course, we'll see higher vehicle loads on these links. And so when we did this local evacuation analysis, some of the key results that came out of this one was that we saw a lot of uphill evacuations in the Southwest quadrant. People were heading uphill to Arlington Avenue to try to exit in that direction. This actually is likely to simulate how people would normally behave, because people are going to want to go to a primary route rather than going perhaps down the winding roads all the way down the Southwest quadrant. The problem though here becomes is that there's potential for high conflict on even just on two-way streets, two-way traffic on a one-way road, for example, people going uphill and people going downhill at the same time, going in different directions, which could be a challenge. We also saw high volumes along very narrow roads. And again, this is under the assumption of the shortest path algorithm. So people may not end up taking these narrow roads, but if they are trying to, if they're trying to minimize that distance, they will be taking these higher, these narrow roads, and it'll be higher volumes. And then we also saw high traffic loads on intersections without traffic control. And this kind of harkens back to Ian's results on the intersections, that a lot of the highest and worst intersections are not traffic controlled. And we can see this through, this is just a very small snapshot of some of these intersections. Of course, some of the intersections are not, don't need any traffic control, but some of them perhaps might. And these are done with different traffic counts and different assumptions. I do want to note that an always stop sign, typically we, as traffic engineers, we approximate about 500 vehicles per hour. So to get the amount of traffic through some of these always stops, it may take over an hour, which is going to be something that needs to be considered in these evacuation plans if we're trying to reduce the evacuation clearance times for getting people out of the wild and urban interface. Next, we did a regional evacuation analysis. So because the assumption of people just trying to exit Kensington may have some problems to it, we wanted to change the assumption a little bit. So we set 4 different regional egress points, again, seen here, and people are trying to minimize, again, the shortest path to one of these different options. And so they will choose the route that in the end will be the shortest. Of course, this is not surprising, but we found high volumes along routes in other jurisdictions, but it's just the extent to which this traffic is that's the real takeaway from here, that this is going to add to the amount of congestion coming from El Cerrito and Berkeley, which means that Kensington residents may experience this congestion and it may back up all the way into Kensington, which then poses really a really high risk to evacuees and potentially being overrun by fire. And so this may require communication again with these other cities to reduce queuing and congestion because these backups into the fire danger zone. Next, we wanted to see what would happen if we opened the cemetery and allowed it to be a route. And we can see that a significant number of people, particularly right in the middle of Kensington, shift their decision from going from one of the other egress points down through the cemetery. The highest reduction in traffic is along Arlington Avenue and along Grizzly Peak Boulevard. And so that's, and since most people probably want to take these more clear routes, this is actually a good sign if we're going to decrease the amount of congestion throughout, especially Arlington Boulevard. There is an issue. If you notice in the map, you see these little loops of really high traffic. There is a looping traffic issue within the cemetery. And that's just because of the network analysis and the methodology behind it. But that does indicate that signage will probably be a critical aspect to ensure that people know which direction to go. Next, we want to do a north fire simulation where we blocked off a good number of the egress points. We're just showing the regional analysis here. And so we did leave one exit open up near Moser, and we can see that that still gets a significant amount of traffic. So if we close that off, it would be really bad throughout the rest of Kensington as people were trying to evacuate down through the community. But it still shows that there's significant traffic going in these different directions, and specifically down through the southern part of the community. Now, if we do again open up the cemetery on the map to the right, we see a lot of that traffic shift, which means that the shifting allows Arlington Boulevard and Spruce and other places in other jurisdictions improve their congestion and will make it a lot easier for evacuees to head that direction. So again, opening up the cemetery is a really important aspect of this. And then finally, we did a southern fire simulation, again, where we blocked off a number of these exit barriers. And again, if we don't open the cemetery, a lot of people are still going to try to go through Arlington Boulevard. And again, you can imagine if that exit becomes blocked as well, the amount of congestion would be faced by a significant number of these egress points out of Kensington. But again, if we open up the cemetery, a lot of that traffic that was going down Arlington is now being shifted up towards up through the cemetery. So the overall network analysis results, and these are just some of the high level results across all the different network analysis models and assumptions that we made. The first is that there's sometimes travel uphill, specifically towards Arlington Boulevard, and sometimes even towards the Welland urban interface, which creates extensive conflicts and potential fire risks. There was high traffic on faster but narrow roads, which again poses a problem, suggests that these narrow roads may still be key options for evacuating vehicles. We also saw high traffic on key intersections that do not have any traffic control. And this presents a conflict in terms of vehicles trying to figure out who has right of way. Again, as Ian mentioned, an all-way stop does have capacity issues, but an uncontrolled intersection has right-of-way issues where people don't know which direction and to go, one, and two, who has priority and if there is any priority. And even just from a safety standpoint on a general basis, it's good to probably have some level of control at intersections, whether that be a yield or a stop. There was also significant queuing of vehicles along major roads, including those in other jurisdictions. And we also found a significant amount of evacuees in the middle of Kensington would choose to evacuate through the cemetery if that was an actual option. For both fire directions with the cemetery open, again, a significant number of evacuees would route through the cemetery. And it should also be noted that smaller roads often experienced a rapid increase in evacuees if their nearest egress was eliminated. So this was for when we closed off some of those certain egresses, the smaller roads adjacent to those ones that were closed off saw a significant amount of traffic. So again, and this is not surprising, when you start closing off egresses, certain roads are going to get worse. But the extent to which they get worse is, I think, the problem that needs to be addressed here. So I want to transition into recommendations, and then we'll open it up for general comments and we can answer some of your questions that you may have. So just some overall recommendations, and these are very high level. For more detailed recommendations, you can go into the report and the executive summary, but these again are very high level. And these kind of go across, all the different phases of our project plan. So this is not all just from the field survey. So the first couple are actually from the review of other evacuation plans from the other jurisdictions, as well as wildfire evacuation literature. The first is that Kensington has recommended that they distribute evacuation plans to the public online and in print. It is good for the public to know where the routes are, for example, if the evacuation plan has the routes, as well as just general considerations. This should be a transparent process. We found that across jurisdictions that did not have their evacuation plans open to the public, there was a lot of trust concerns, which then makes it a lot harder to communicate evacuation orders. Next is create joint evacuation and emergency plans with neighboring communities, in this case specifically El Cerrito and Berkeley. And this is just the fact that wildfires know geographic bounds. They will jump, you know, between boundaries, of course, and jurisdictions don't really matter here. So it's important to think about creating this joint plan, especially since the only way to really get out of Kensington is to go through another jurisdiction. We also recommend to run a campaign to increase signups for emergency alerts for both Contra Costa and Alameda counties. I heard that that signups for the Contra Costa County system are very high for Kensington, which is really good. However, it's recommended that Alameda, that residents also sign up for Alameda County, because a fire can originate in Berkeley and blow through Kensington. Issue of mandatory evacuation orders proactively and across multiple platforms. And this is because people have different technology uses, but it should be noted that this is a very proactive aspect in order to reduce the risk to evacuees in terms of trying to evacuate with under 5 minutes, which has happened in many previous California wildfires. And finally, providing real-time information to community emergency response teams, also known as CERTs, as well as neighborhood-based groups, will also be very important moving forward. So some of the more low-hanging fruit that could be, some of these are low-hanging fruit, some of them are a little bit more challenging, but it should be noted that there are general recommendations from the field survey that we found. The first is identifying uphill routes for emergency vehicles. This may include some of those roads that currently do not have access to the public because of the bollards. But identifying uphill routes for emergency vehicles will be very important, particularly if fire engines and ladders from other jurisdictions are coming through into Kensington to try to fight the fire. They won't know necessarily which way to go, and it could hamper the evacuation process. Next is reduce vegetation where possible along major roads. This is not necessarily a full-scale let's take out all the trees recommendation, but just perhaps pruning certain vegetation as well as underbrush where it could be a real challenge. Examine removing bollards by the Kensington Elementary School. Again, this is mostly for the uphill routes for emergency vehicles, but it could be used for evacuations. And similarly, examine the EB Mud access road at Summit Reservoir as an alternate route or as, again, that emergency vehicle route. And this will require, obviously, having a conversation with EB Mud. Next is establishing clear zones at intersections. We found that in the field survey that a lot of vehicles were parked very close to the intersection. This creates a real challenge for larger vehicles attempting to turn, such as fire engines or buses, if transit is going to be a part of a future evacuation plan. So even establishing a clear zone of one or two vehicles is going to be a real game changer and allow a lot more maneuverability of vehicles in these types of events. As Ian mentioned, we also recommend that Kensington investigate alternative gutter designs to increase street width, whether that be through the metal grates or other different types of methods that may be available in order to increase the road width along these areas. Add clearly visible signage for walking paths, and alongside this is improved wayfinding regarding evacuation routes. The majority of Kensington residents will know where to go. There is a likelihood that it will become very disorienting. And not all Kensington residents know all other parts of Kensington. So they may be evacuating through a section of Kensington that they have never actually driven through. And so this can be a very disorienting process. And there's also a chance that people who do not live in the community, but may be staying staying either vacation or other reasons why they might be in the community, even going to a business, that they will not know where to go. So improving wayfinding will be critical for this. And that's some low hanging fruit, even just putting up signs, particularly in the cemetery. From the network analysis, a couple recommendations. Again, we need to, we recommend that Kensington identify road combinations as primary evacuation routes. We include some of these road combinations in the report. So we hope that these can be useful for Kensington. Of course, and based on these network analysis results, Kensington needs to gain full access to the Sunset View Cemetery gate so that vehicles are able to pass through. And it should also be noted that if full access is gained, then that information needs to be shared with the public so that the public knows that the cemetery is a viable option. But again, the gate has to have, you have to have full access in order to do that. We also recommend improving Sunset Drive in the nearby area, particularly if we're going to be using the cemetery. And remember that really unconventional intersection. This one is not low-hanging fruit. This is going to require a lot of assistance from El Cerrito and Berkeley, perhaps. But deploying traffic coordinators at key intersections, and again, this is really that response aspect. So it's not necessarily part of the planning and preparedness, but it still will have to be pre-planned on where these traffic coordinators may be. And even if there's only two or three, the question is which intersections are critical for that. And the report outlines some of that. This is not, again, this is not low-hanging fruit here, and this may require some more long-term thinking. And obviously a lot of discussion with the public, but consider instituting one-way directions or parking restrictions either all the time or only on red flag warning days. That is a important consideration that needs to be made because a lot of these roads are extremely narrow and on certain locations, having all these parked cars can be really challenging for people trying to evacuate. So even if it's just a red flag warning day, it might only be a couple days of the year. That's not too bad for increasing the amount of capacity on the roadway. And kind of along with these recommendations, we also recommend that people should park their vehicles in their driveways as much as possible on these red flag warning days. And I think that's on the next slide. And then also for the network analysis, it's just very clear that strong coordination needs to be established with El Cerrito and Berkeley, especially if both are dealing with the wildfire themselves. Last set of recommendations, again, some low-hanging fruit, some not. And so we recognize that a lot of these are not feasible, but we do at least want to put them out there as encouragement, as ways to improve the evacuation process. Again, removing some on-street parking and or restricting parking only in certain key areas, perhaps first, such as intersections. And that's kind of going down to a couple bullet points below is removing those several spaces of parking near tight, unconventional and or critical intersections. Designating some very narrow roads as one-way traffic permanently or for red flag days. I already covered that. Improving intersection signage to improve flow. Considering some two-way streets as single direction downhill in an evacuation. Of course, this is going to require a lot of pre-planning and the public is going to have to know about this, as well as being able to put out all the traffic cones and being able to actually have people, personnel being able to do this. So that is definitely on the further end of what is feasible currently, but it's still just a thought to have moving forward. And again, encouraging residents to park vehicles in driveways as well as off the street really as much as possible. So with that, we'd be happy to take questions and public comments. We hope that we can address some of them. Some of them will be a lot harder to address given the bounds of our analysis and our research. But we do hope that this was at least some good information. And we hope that Kensington can use some of this to improve their plans for a wildfire evacuation plan. And this is not by all the... a full comprehensive research project, but this is definitely a step in the right direction and can help inform other types of analyses that may have to go through, including a full traffic modeling analysis. So with that, I think I will hand it off to Kevin for moderating this next portion. And I think Jeremy will be able to jump in for some of this to help provide questions. But again, we welcome your feedback, and we hope that this was beneficial for Kensington. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. May I ask people in the public, a few people have raised hands, other people have written in question and answer. It's going to be easier for us just on priority if people, rather than raising your hand, if you just write a question to question and answer, and we'll get them read. Just so everyone knows, the people we have with us as panelists, and by panelists, we're just people who are able to talk, are from our fire board, our president, Julie Stein, and Larry Nagel and me, who are directors. And then we have our three consultants, Ian and Jeremy and Stephen. We have Officer Brad Harms, who has recently joined our Kensington Police Force. He's a traffic expert, and we're really delighted to have him. We've had great talk with him about some of the results of this. And of course, our fire chief, Michael Bagoni, who runs the El Cerrito Kensington Fire Department. So just so we know who everyone is. Julie, I believe you have some comments and questions that were submitted before, and so they need to be read into the record. Would you like to do that first?
Well, Kevin, we were going to first give our panelists, either yourself and Larry, as well as Chief Bagoni and Officer Harms, the opportunity to ask their questions first. And then I was actually thinking that since I forwarded all those questions to all three traffic consultants, we will print the exact wording of those questions in the public record with the minutes. But perhaps if Stephen, Jeremy, or Ian have had a chance to review those questions, they might be able to summarize them and answer them. That might go faster. And then I'll hand it back to you to moderate the public question and answer. So just so everybody knows, we've had as many as 62 members of the public join us so far. They're coming and going, but this is great. So Chief Bagoni, allow me to start with you. Did you have any questions or comments that you'd like to make?
I have no questions. The only comment I would have is some of the suggestions that they have on parking, especially anything that reduces the cars on the street, is, in all honesty, would be very important, not even during evacuations, but just day to day. As everybody knows, it is very difficult to traverse the hills going, from the Arlington up. There are very, very tight roads on a good day. Let alone in a situation where we're trying to do evacuations. So anything that could be that could come out of this study where, we can get more cars off the street and into the driveways and garages would be a help to us every single day.
Thank you. And Officer Harms?
Yes. There's several excellent recommendations. We had a previous Zoom meeting with Larry and Kevin and the fire chief. And during that meeting, a couple of primary critical suggestions. I've already taken the initiative with the support of the police chief. First of all, my first comment is the president of the Sunset View Cemetery, Scott Pennington, has already been approached. He is more than happy to cooperate with fire and PD to make the Sunset View Cemetery a egress route. So that's been taken care of, he's on board. And the second thing, I like the idea of the community emergency response team. I envision that as part of the new volunteer program that Kensington PD is implementing. I was specifically brought here 3 months ago due to my traffic background, but also my background in community-oriented policing. So there's going to be opportunities to integrate the community working with first responders and implementing some of these solutions. So the recommendations, there are several of them that I love, and I'm actually anxious to get started on. Some of the others might be difficult, but I think we're heading the right direction, and I'm excited.
Thank you, Officer Harms. Kevin or Larry, as panelists, did you have anything else that you'd like to add before we go to our consultants with the written public comments?
Nothing for me, thank you.
Okay, how about you, Larry?
Nothing for me, Julie.
Okay, so Stephen, Ian, and Jeremy, I sent you those comments. Are you in a place where you're prepared to summarize what was mentioned and just address those comments?
Yeah, I think Jeremy might have a couple notes to provide for some of those. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you guys for having us and for how many people have turned out to listen in. So definitely appreciate that. So a couple of them were more able to address or give a clear answer to than others that were more similar to comments. I'll just summarize what was sent in already. So first one was about sort of from Peter Rush emphasizing the importance of sirens as not just an alternative method, but an absolute essential requirement for alerting residents of an immediate life-threatening event. So just highlighting that. And the others. Another one from Peter about how some of the figures from the report might be confusing because they don't have adequate legending, but I'm not sure in this context if I can directly, it would be useful to directly address those specific points about those, more about labeling and clarity in the report, but that's still welcome. There was another one from Peter that I feel like we could address, and that is actually brings up a very important point. So the first one is asking about the assumption that we assume that the population will be higher during the weekday as opposed to weekend due to weekend travel and vacations. So about why we decided the times that we did for doing the analysis. So weekdays in the nighttime. He was asking if we know about the relative size of the stay at home versus gone to work weekday dynamics of the Kensington population, or stay at home or not on the weekends. So there wasn't data that we could find that would have that level of granularity for an area as small as Kensington or even at a city level. So I would say that though we can't know that, I'd still say that during weekday night times is probably most likely to have the most vehicles on the street, which I think is one of the largest barriers during the evacuation in terms of limiting both how many people will be there and in terms of how difficult it will be for them to get out. So that's sort of an initial answer, but a good point. The other complicating factor that he brings up is an analysis of weekday in Kensington population from when you include the population of the Kensington Hilltop School children. Are parents going to be rushing back to Kensington during a wildfire event in concern for their children? We focus on the elementary school as a gathering point because we're assuming that it's not during the daytime. Speaking from a personal level, because we weren't able to discuss as a full group, but I would say that this is a good alternative to scenario to also keep in mind. I'd expect there'd be less parked vehicles on the streets. So again, that issue of the getting out, evacuating a large group. But I think just without having had time to do a full study of it, I would say that there the issue would be more moving large groups of people that cannot drive. So especially the evacuation from there would be a scenario to consider, but I think that's a good point, a good alternative scenario to keep in mind when formulating plans.
Yeah, and to kind of go off of Jeremy, that's going to require planning with the elementary school. There's no doubt about that, that there's going to have to be a process for that to ensure that children are able to be safely evacuated from that area. However, it should be noted that in general, and this is not always, but in general, most major wildfires that have occurred in the last 4 years in California have been nighttime wildfires. And so that's usually when winds pick up too. So we often see that's the case, and we should have maybe, there is a chance that we may have more warning time if it's something during the daytime. But communicating with parents is going to be essential, as well as communicating with the school on ensuring that the children are able to be evacuated. and that there's a setup location for where those children will end up going. And so the recommendation from our side would probably be from a school in Kensington, from the school in Kensington to go to somewhere in El Cerrito, since that's closer in terms of that.
Thank you, Stephen. And I'll just note on the, there was one more that we got sort of separate from the Q&A that is here, but was from Paul Moss saying, your report included over 40 recommendations, condensed to about half that in the executive summary. Some will require a lot of time to implement, and others could be considered low-hanging fruit that hopefully could be accomplished in a few months. The current fire season is essentially here, and conditions appear to be threatening as ever. What are your top 4 to 5 recommendations that hopefully can be implemented in the next few months and would have the biggest impact towards generating an efficient and safe traffic evacuation plan for Kensington for this fire season? Emphasis added on the end there. So that is a difficult question. And I was able to pull out a couple during the presentation while Stephen and Ian were giving it. So again, with that limitation in mind, I'll just say in general that, like, echoing what Stephen has already said, that a lot of this comes down to communication and coordination between Kensington, the city, the town of Kensington, its fire department, with other stakeholders is kind of something that will, like, you'll hear over and over again in our recommendations, and is, in terms of preparation, is probably one of the most important things, even if it doesn't involve building new infrastructure or changing the existing infrastructure, that communication and that planning is one of the most important parts. So a couple that I pulled out that seemed, I will say this with the caveat that, you know, some of this takes, there are more players than I may be aware of, or the coordination or political will might be more difficult. But some that come to mind, I'll say, are like, wayfinding for major routes and finding the capacity to designate what are the major evacuation routes, I think is important to taking a step forward and saying, committing that these are the routes that we think most people will take, or that we want most people to take, and being able to designate those and start being able to actually label those is something that's important, very important. As I mentioned, I prefaced this with beginning the conversation with El Cerrito and Berkeley, the city and fire departments, particularly with the cemetery. And it sounds like you guys have already gotten started with that. And that's also will be important. I'm not aware of the political processes involved in this, so I can't speak to whether it would take a few months or longer, but the idea of clear zones or lack of, or removing parking right near unconventional or critical or tight intersections. So not the whole streets, but 1 to 2 car lengths near those intersections that if we've designated evacuation routes or we know that are unconventional, might be something that is more feasible than some of these larger efforts in addressing parking issues. As I already mentioned, coordinating with the cemetery staff, access for fire, police, community officials, et cetera. And the last is, again, as it sounds like you're already making progress on, is working on this volunteer effort, community emergency response team, and making sure that as it's established that there's information available, published, and using them as an intermediary so that the community can respond in an event, particularly focused around how will you deal with the most vulnerable members of the community, so people without a vehicle, older adults, people with disabilities, et cetera, who might not have other means of evacuating.
Yeah.
Stephen and Ian, I also welcome your additions.
Yeah, so I think that last piece on engaging the community, on sharing resources, that's actually a lot of my dissertation work here at UC Berkeley, is on how we can leverage resources from community members, private citizens, in order to increase the amount of resources available, increase compliance with evacuation orders. And you bring up the fact that there might be carless individuals as well as older adults that may need assistance in these evacuations. So I think that's a great pathway and fantastic that we have Brad coming in as helping out with this, because I think it's a critical aspect of evacuations and it has to be pre-planned. Again, the Sunset Cemetery, that's definitely a good thing. I think also just looking at those alternative evacuation options of taking out bollards here and there for emergency vehicles. I think just in general, as low-hanging fruit, having a coordination structure for not just notifying the public, but also notifying people who may be coming into the disaster zone. And that can mean fire departments and other people from other jurisdictions who have no idea anything about Kensington. And so that is a really important aspect of the response, and having that structure in place will be critical. And I think can be put in place before the wildfire season begins, at least such that that outside assistance will know what to do when they come to Kensington. Ian?
Yeah, and just to echo some of Jeremy's points, I think, you know, again, wayfinding is really important. There's a lot of locations, especially when you're going east to west on some of these evacuation, what we would consider to be the major routes right now, that you'd have to turn. If you keep going straight, you end up in a dead end. Or there's these other, you know, other locations where the streets are narrow and the preferred direction of evacuation is not clear, that you could go out either end of the street. And, you know, these present, you know, by defining which direction the evacuation route is in, and also defining, you know, signing the routes and making sure that there's clear communication about those, I think is, you know, it's not something that can happen next week probably, but it's something that I think could be, you know, implemented this year. And again, stressing the communication with the other, with the adjacent jurisdictions, because a lot, you know, again, to reiterate, a lot of our modeling, you know, we put traffic toward Berkeley on Spruce Street and Arlington Avenue, but at the same time, you know, if there's an emergency, then people in Berkeley are probably going to be evacuating as well. And, you know, that wasn't something we were able to take into account in our survey, but, you know, or at least quantitatively. But it's something that's going to have, that's going to be a reality in any of these scenarios.
Thank you. So now I will turn it over to Kevin and Larry so that you can moderate the Q&A. We have 16 questions queued up and one hand raised. So I'll let you manage that.
Thanks. Maybe the thing to do is run through the questions briefly. As we noted before, if you've raised your hand, if you could just type a question in the Q&A, it would be better for us, just so everyone would get a turn. The other day, as mentioned, Larry and I met with Officer Harms and with Chief Pagoni, and also with Chief Simpkins of the police department, who can't be with us today. And we went over a lot of these concerns. I think some of these questions can be dealt with pretty quickly, but I'm gonna, maybe the easiest thing to do would be to just go through them. And then if either Officer Harms or Chief Pagoni has comments, or and I'll ask you, jump in, or anybody else that knows about this. The first one is whether the surface of Grizzly Peak is fire safe. We talked about this and the answer seems to be yes. Chief Pagoni has said it's called a temporary sheltering area, so you don't want to be there for a long time. One of our concerns is access, and Chief Pagoni can talk about that. The other is it's a good open space, but we haven't ascertained yet whether there's a source of water that might help us dampen embers if people were to gather in there temporarily. Chief, do you want to address that?
Well, as far as it being fire safe, as everybody knows, since they've taken the reservoir out, it is a massive area. And so what a temporary refuge area requires, basically when you don't have a physical shelter, is it requires distance. It's the same criteria that we use on wildland fires, where we make safe zones. Is if we can get a big enough area where basically flame length that you would experience through the, you know, coming through the trees, that you have a bigger area than what that's going to what that's going to impinge on the area. So, you know, is it a place you're going to ride the fire out, or even temporary refuge, you know, without some smoke and without some embers falling? No. But is it survivable there for a temporary place as, you know, we try to get more people off the hill? Absolutely. You know, obviously going towards the Berkeley side, the Spruce side, the west, southern west side of it, basically close to where the water tanks are there. I have not been to the physical water tanks that they put in there. I would assume there must be some sort of water source there either. Most of their water tanks have what we call a static hydrant, you know, to be used in the case of an earthquake, that it is, you know, basically it's just the pressure of the tank, it's gravity feed for it. But having not been there since the tank's been put in, I do not know. But as far as the access, they've talked about the gates on either side. I am certain that, you know, if we could meet and talk with them, that they would give us permission to put our own keys or our own padlocks on there, you know, and we can make arrangements for people to go in there. I doubt they would want it left open all the time, but, you know, in the event of emergency, I'm sure.
Great, thank you. This question is best answered by our consultants. What are the intersections on the four egress points on the last model?
So I'm assuming the last model is talking about the regional model. So the four that we used were Fairmount and Richmond, Solano and Masonic, Richmond and Mosner, and Arlington Circle. Arlington Circle, I believe at the top of, basically at the top of the circle, the northern top of the circle.
Okay, and this is the way that people, basically by egress points, it's a main place where people get out. That's where the traffic's mainly funneling.
Right, our assumption going into this was that people would eventually try to evacuate towards the highway or otherwise head east, and so we were looking, or west, I'm sorry, so looking for major routes that were outside Kensington that we expected people might go to in their way, and they're trying to get both west towards the highway and get out of the region, maybe.
Great, thanks. The next one is whether the cemetery is already amenable to being open during a red flag warning. And I want to say we had our discussion on Thursday, and Officer Harms said he would go the next day to talk to the cemetery people. And this is Saturday. You got his answer. He solved the problem. Now we can go ahead and try to just talk with them about some of the fine points of helping make that a clearer exit. We'd like them to add one more little sign in there. It'll help all their people in the cemetery on normal days, but it just helps you get out. So we're extremely grateful to Officer Harms for just getting on this right away.
Absolutely. Our conversation was clear the other day. The cemetery is critical, and they are very open to working with the public. And there's ways, Larry and Kevin, that perhaps we can go with Detective Nath. He's already set up an appointment Wednesday, so we can talk more about fine-tuning that emergency evacuation route and some modifications to enhance the egress.
Thank you. The big figure in the consultant's report was 30%. That's how much the traffic can be handled by that route, and that will take a big burden off. And I, you know, think maybe prevent some cars from being, you know, abandoned at bad intersections while people try to walk into the cemetery. So we're hoping about that this is a really good help for us. The next question is what the HH denominator is, that is vehicles per HH. I believe that's household, guys?
Yep, correct.
That's household.
Sorry, what about removing all the bollards in a red flag warning? We talked about this the other day. The keys and padlocks have to be checked. I was walking and checked a couple of them on the Kensington Park route yesterday. So it's going to be a question of ownership, how fast people can get there. We've discussed, I mean, you can't make that two ways. So is it one way uphill for access by emergency vehicles, or is it one way downhill for people to evacuate? This is a conversation I think we're going to keep having. I don't know whether Officer Harms or Chief Pagoni has a further thought on this.
Well, my only thought is, I mean, obviously the Ballards at the top are on the school property, I believe. So, I mean, conversation has to be made with them as, you know, as to the reason they want the Ballards in there. You know, if they're pulled out during red flag days, is it something that, you know, people are going to start using as a shortcut? We all know the traffic in and out of the Kensington Hilltop School is during school time is, you know, very, very tough on it. The other question that would have to be asked of the school is what their evacuation plan is. I've heard people up there talk about basically using that path as a way to get the kids off the hill and basically down to the community center to get them further away from, you know, from basically being where they're at there. So if it's in their plan to march kids down that hill, then that kind of takes it out of even being used for cars. So again, you know, like so many of these things, there has to be a coordination with all parties or all the stakeholders involved here. It's not a simple yes, no answer.
Thank you.
I agree with the fire chief. It's going to require an incredible amount of coordination. But the red flag day warnings, if they are issued and if it is incorporated, that would kind of give the PD a head start or a notice that those need to be unlocked potentially, so that they can be removed in case of emergencies. But again, it's going to require a lot of coordination. Manageable.
One of the things that I always hear from Chief Pagoni is everything is situational. You know, a fire can be coming fast, can be close. It can be in this part of the town, the other part of the town. Our consultants thought about fires coming from either more north or more south directions, but it's just really hard for blanket prescriptions on some of these problems. The next question is about whether an analysis has been done on what the discretionary capacity of driveway parking is, whereby normally street parked cars can be moved onto driveways. Do we have an analysis on that? How much can street passage really be improved by driveway parking? I'll let the consultants deal with that, but I think that many of us who live in town know that when we walk around the streets, there are some cars parked in driveways on a given day, but there are also a lot of empty driveways. And our thinking was that we could probably do a lot saving the load by on red flag days or Diablo wind event days by urging people to get off the streets and park nose out. I'll let the consultants deal with that. You guys got any thoughts?
Yeah, so we didn't do a specific analysis because that was not part of our scope. But I think something that I will say, and I think maybe Ian and Jeremy might have some more insights on this, particularly on the parking side, is that there were some instances where a single vehicle causes a pinch point. So a single vehicle parked causes a reduction in capacity of the roadway. And so if that single vehicle's off the road and in a driveway, then now you have a full two lanes that don't have any obstructions that can actually have full capacity. So the short answer is it's likely to help a lot in certain situations. Ian and Jeremy?
Yeah, just like highlighting again, if you look at the in Stephen's presentation where he talks about the percent see a number that are a low percentage, which usually indicates only one or two pinch points that are caused by only one or two vehicles. So those streets in particular, see, it would be easiest to have the biggest improvement. And some of those may well be along major evacuation routes.
Yeah, as Stephen noted, we weren't able to do, you know, a full census of, you know, sort of which driveways appeared to have space. And, you know, I mean, again, we had no way of knowing if garages are available and that type of thing. I guess one thing to think about with driveway parking is one thing we looked at in the survey as well was sidewalks. And we didn't end up including the presentation for time reasons, but sort of the corollary to having more driveway parking is that we noticed a lot of cases where sidewalks got blocked by cars in driveways. So that might be the trade-off there to consider going forward.
Thanks, guys. Our next question is actually about a typo. I'll just leave that for you guys to deal with later. Then we move to another question asking whether you've assumed two cars per household as the load for the evacuation modeling. Did you model one car per household, as that might be very likely in an emergency situation?
Yeah, and I'll let Jeremy kind of talk a little bit more about this. So we did do two cars were what we kind of mostly present, but in the report, we also present 1.5 vehicles per household and 2.5 vehicles per household. I've conducted several post-disaster wildfire surveys from the Carr wildfire, as well as the 2017 Southern California wildfires. And the number of vehicles per household that are evacuating typically is around two. Now, this obviously is a problem because it does increase the amount of congestion on roadways. And so I'm not sure if we presented this specifically in the report, but in general, if a household is able to take only one vehicle to evacuate, that can greatly reduce the amount of congestion on the roadways. Now, obviously for households that have to take two vehicles in order to have everyone together, that's another story. But the amount of the fact that you have two or even sometimes three vehicles, I found in the Carr wildfire that 16% of evacuees took three or more vehicles. That is an incredible amount of congestion that you're adding to the roadways that then increases the time estimates, that increases hazards for other evacuees. And so the number of vehicles per household, yes, it is assumption, but I completely agree with the comment that it'd be great if we can get down to one, but in some cases that's not possible. But we do encourage less vehicles per household.
And just to speak to the Kensington situation, based on the most recent American Community Survey, which is census data, is that Kensington has on average 2.12 vehicles per household. So that also kind of informed why we did that range of 1.5 to 2.5, generally settled around two for most of the charts that we did show.
Something else to note on this point is that because we applied this count of the number of vehicles per household uniformly across the area, all the vehicle per household count changes is just it's just a scaling factor on the on the road traffic counts. So there isn't a change in the distribution of traffic. The traffic is distributed the same in all scenarios because we're just making these uniform assumptions. So it'd just be a matter of the exact counts at specific intersections and on specific road segments.
Thank you, guys. That's very illuminating. There's a question about whether it's useful to have a lead agency to do the follow-up work suggested by the report. If so, what is that lead agency? Others can comment. Just for background, of course, we are an unincorporated area of the county. So the county is responsible basically for everything that gets done for permissions. It's their roads, it's their kinds of things. And as the consultants have said, some of the further analysis that we would need to be more specific about evacuation would be costly, difficult, and imprecise. But I'll let the consultants and our chief and officer talk more about that as they'd like. Guys?
I'll go first. As far as a lead agency, I don't know if it's so much a lead agency or basically a lead person, something of an emergency preparedness person, because I guarantee you to what would be needed to deal with all of these different aspects would probably be a full-time job for a little while. I mean, it's not going to be a full-time job forever, but you're talking a lot of reaching out to stakeholders. You're talking about a lot of research, a lot of time spent with county people. This is nothing you're going to do you know, just a couple hours a week and be able to accomplish everything or get on the right direction as far as I'm concerned with, you know, with all the different recommendations. You know, they're all great recommendations, but they take time and it takes somebody dedicated to it.
Yeah, thank you. And we need to leave it to the professionals. So the next question is that early 1990s, the Kensington Improvement Club did a similar study in cooperation with the fire department. Can you advise to what extent those recommendations were reviewed and how they differ from your current recommendation?
From our side, we did not have access to that study, so we were not unable to compare what those recommendations were. We don't have direct knowledge of that, but it would be an interesting comparison to see if anything's changed and what has, you know, if anything has changed, what hasn't. So an interesting process that could be given, save for another day and for someone to do.
Okay. Another comment, the easiest measure would be to encourage residents to control vegetation. On Highgate Road, which has no sidewalks, there are many areas where the vegetation overhangs or encroaches into the street. How can we address that concern? I guess maybe Chief Pagoni could answer that with respect to mitigation.
Well, the mitigation of it is obviously through, you'd have to look at the various areas. But it would be through the vegetation management program. Quite honestly, as you know from last year, we had over 300 violations in Kensington. Quite honestly, the fire department can only do so much in getting out there and doing these inspections and follow-ups on the violations. If every single resident in Kensington would meet the fire district's vegetation management program, just for the vegetation we're talking about, that would not be a problem. My whole suggestion is that, you know, neighbors need to talk to neighbors. Neighbors need to help neighbors. You know, we're out there right now doing the inspections. You know, many people are probably going to be getting letters from the fire department. We're in May right now. Things are dry. And quite honestly, and doing some windshield surveys of driving around, very few people have gotten into the mode of either doing their own weed abatement or bringing in the landscapers. Landscapers have not been affected as far as doing fire prevention work. They have not been affected by the shelter in place. You know, manicuring your lawns and stuff like that, yes. Trimming trees, whacking weeds, now landscapers have been, it's been lessened up, I believe, for landscapers, but, honestly, as a community, each of us needs to take the initiative to get out there and trim and meet the vegetation management standards that the district has. The community is going to be a whole lot safer.
And if I could comment on that. The vegetation management program that the fire chief's talking about, that is, I can imagine that would be a daunting task. And volunteers are considered force multipliers, and I'm envisioning morphing the newly implemented volunteer program with the PD, potentially to coordinate work and to work with you to take the pressure off of the fire department. And I'm going to be looking for volunteers, and we are accepting volunteer applications. I kind of see volunteers working with the vegetation management program, potentially with the blessing of the fire chief. And again, it would require coordination. But I think with volunteers being force multipliers, it makes our job that much easier if you get the right people.
Great. Thanks very much. The next question is, can you tell us more about the role of the Kensington paths in an evacuation? The paths aren't currently publicly owned and can't be improved until acquisition can be accomplished. How important would it be to make improvements to the paths to facilitate an evacuation? Well, this is a great question. It's one that almost answers itself. It would be great to improve the paths, but nobody owns them, and so legally it's kind of tough. And as some of the path keepers have noticed to us under the current COVID regulations, they actually haven't been able to get out to improve some of the paths for the most part in groups. The paths, though, as the consultants have noted, are potentially really important, and they're all very different, as all the path keepers know, in terms of access, as Stephen pointed out. Do you guys have any other comments?
I'll just note that while we were out in the field, we didn't run into too many people, but anecdotally, we ran across multiple people who indicated that they plan to evacuate on foot in the event of an emergency. So, you know, whether it's on the paths or not, I think, you know, they are part of the picture here.
And one additional thing to note on that is that it's part of evacuation by foot will probably likely be part of the equation, but also as part of planning, just noting back to our recommendations that many of the paths might not go all the way down or to reach safety. So planning not just for people to walk down on foot, but how they might be able to connect with some type of high capacity transit of some kind to evacuate them from when they reach either the bottom of the path or the bottom of where they're able to go would also be part of the holistic view for how people can evacuate.
Thanks. The next question is about, this is really important, but the undergrounding of utilities. As we learned, the Berkeley-Oakland fire doesn't take but a single down power line or pole to completely ruin the best evacuation plans. What's your recommendation with regard to undergrounding utilities? Let me say by way of background that this has been a longstanding question among residents. The Kensington Property Owners Association several years ago had a forum where county experts and others spoke about undergrounding, how difficult it is to do it, but it has to be done neighborhood by neighborhood. The town agencies like the fire and police boards have absolutely no power in this. It has to be done on a neighborhood basis, but it's incredibly important in saving lives. It's expensive, however, and you have to get everybody in the neighborhood to do it. Having said that, the undergrounding is really important because as the correspondent points out, it really can really mess up plans for evacuations. And I'd let Chief Pagoni and Officer Harms comment on anything further.
I mean, as far as undergrounding utilities, I mean, of course, if that could be done, that would be great. I mean, not only from the aspect of wildland fires and affecting the evacuation routes, but obviously, you know, even if we're not evacuating during these high wind events that we have, even without fire, we do get downed. We get downed wires or we get downed trees that take out the wires. You know, so obviously, you know, undergrounding them would be great. But as you stated, it is extremely expensive. It is not within our purview to even order it or require or, you know, force PG&E to do that. And, you know, the other part that will create besides the cost of it is, you know, we're going to have major roads at times that are going to be totally blocked for long periods of times while they do the trenching, you know, even if they wanted to do it, the public has to be willing to do some walking, and because you're not always going to be able to get to your house when they, even if they do block by block, you know, as narrow as our streets are, if you've ever seen them trenching to put the undergrounds, you know, it's not just a small ditch. It's, they open it up wide and put all the utilities underground. So it'd be great, but it's not easy.
And from the PD perspective, that's beyond our jurisdiction, to piggyback what the chief just said.
Thank you. The next question is about interesting improving traffic flow on Gibbon Street, not just for fire and earthquake safety, but for general pedestrian safety. There's lots of children, a blind curve. I'd like to see our street become one way, limit parking to one side only for the entire length of the street, and have the speed limit reduced to 15 miles an hour. I will, every public safety officer we speak to knows that traffic is the third rail pretty much everywhere. Kensington's no exception. And the difficulty of getting this done and getting all neighbors to agree to it is the really very difficult point. Maybe Officer Harms or Chief Pagoni has something further on that.
Sure. In order for us to, for the PD to get curbs painted red, we have to work with county on that, with the traffic safety investigators, with Public Works, and the county. We have to work with them closely on that. It's not easy. There's regulations. There are certain things or criteria that must be met in order for it to meet the requirements. It could be visited and surveyed, but it's doable. It's just no easy task, and it takes cooperation and buy-in from the county working closely with the PD.
Good, thank you. Makes sense. This one's for our consultant. On your map of Kensington, it looks like the final part of Purdue heading north, beginning at Garden Drive, have no data. Does the plan not cover private roads?
I'll let Ian take that one. I think he might have something on that. But I don't think that it covers private roads.
Yeah, for the purposes of our analysis, we limited it to things that were public roads. A lot of the cases, I will say, Purdue is maybe more in the exception here, but there's a lot of small roads in Kensington that are sort of functionally driveways, appeared to be private to us. So we limited ourselves to public roads for our survey.
And a lot of that was based on the idea that we would not be able to provide recommendations for changing private roads.
Okay. The cemetery being private was an exception, but it's an obvious one because there's an endpoint and an outpoint, so you know about that one. The next question is, figure 37 shows vehicle count expected on the preferred or expected evacuation routes, but there's no indication of the rate at which those routes can absorb, accommodate, or move that count. Do I understand that you said that would require a separate study?
Yeah,
that would require.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
To understand more about truly what the congestion, for example, would look like and focus on the capacity of each individual road, that would require a more rigorous traffic simulation study, micro simulation, meso simulation, to determine that.
Great, okay. Another question, in Hawaii, there's plenty of signage for tsunami evacuations. The signage for wildfire evacuations would be good and also raise consciousness. I think the consultants have spoken to that, and also Officer Harms mentioned that this would be in the category of low-hanging fruit. Not that it's easy, we'd have to buy the signs and figure out where to put them and what direction. This is also would go along with painting roads for evacuation routes, but this is certainly one of the things that we'd like to look into getting done as probably very useful and maybe less invasive or costly. Is that generally correct, guys?
Yeah, tsunami signage is critical for ensuring safe evacuations in a lot of those communities. Hawaii, Oregon has a lot, Washington, even California. If you've been to Point Reyes, they actually have evacuation tsunami warning signs. So completely agree that having these wildfire evacuation signs would be critical. From my background knowledge in evacuations, wildfires are pretty much the only key major evacuation or disaster type that doesn't actually have signs for it. Hurricanes always have a lot and designate routes very clearly. They even have road paintings in certain places for shoulder usage. So having this communication is critical, and especially for people who may not even know that they're in a wildfire zone, which can be people visiting. You never know how many people are visiting certain areas at a certain time. And so just because you know, the focus is on residents in the community, doesn't mean that there are people who don't understand wildfires who happen to be in the community at the time.
If I can piggyback off that. Due to the fires in Napa, the one unincorporated city in Napa County is Anglin, and they took the initiative, and along the Silverado Trail, they recently installed signs that are to code, and they're blue with a border of black with white lettering, and it has arrows at critical junctures or areas where you either turn left or right, and it says emergency evacuation route. Based upon your guys' study and the conversation we had the other day, that is something that is manageable and is doable at a minimal expense. Painting the roads is going to be a whole nother issue. Then you're getting into a code and standards with Caltrans and so forth. So the signs, based upon your study and what other cities have started to do, I think it's spot on.
Okay, great. Thank you. The next question is, Sunset is crowded with all those cars parking there. Since it's a major thoroughfare, is it possible to make this street no parking? I believe the question has kind of been answered. It has to be worked out with the county, and certainly it helps if the residents are all on board. Anybody want to say more about that?
From the network analysis standpoint, there was a significant amount of traffic going through Sunset. So, I mean, if these critical links are going to become are really important when it comes to an evacuation and having, and kind of to piggyback off a lot of what has been said, pinch points are going to be what really hampers an evacuation. And so these small critical links, they may be somewhat difficult for, you know, some time or maybe permanently, but if it improves the overall conditions for everyone else evacuating, it could be a good thing to do.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that a little bit, something that's interesting to note here, if you go into the report, you'll see that we actually didn't observe a lot of cars parked along Sunset or Franciscan Way along the top of the cemetery. And that might indicate this is one of the areas where there's more daytime parking than nighttime parking. We actually, the biggest thing that we identified with Sunset is that there's a lot of foliage overhanging it for almost its entire length. So it's just something to consider, you know, also taking a look at some of the daytime conditions, some of these locations. And again, sort of go back to the a couple questions ago about whether the network analysis doesn't presume that the routes can handle the traffic, right? Like, even though it basically, when we opened up the cemetery, it allows 30% of the traffic to divert that way, but there'd have to be an actual traffic study to determine that that route for its whole length can actually handle that traffic capacity.
Yeah, with that in mind, like the two biggest difficulties to making that cemetery route be the as effective as it can be are getting along Sunset Drive and the critical intersection there with Arlington and that unconventional turn. So those two pieces are connected to making the cemetery as effective as it can be.
And I would add the traffic signal at the bottom as well would require some coordination with El Cerrito to make sure that that doesn't become a bottleneck.
Excellent. There's another comment. The issue is pinch points. So it's a question of whether moving enough cars off the roadway into driveways is adequate. Need more info on quote unquote the short answer. I'm not sure which the short answer was, but it's certainly a good point about getting cars off the roadway, especially around where there are pinch points on streets. Anybody have comments on that?
Yeah, I can. So in the report, if I'm not mistaken, it should have the appendix of data. So if you go into that data section, you can actually see which links that we came in the field study only have a single parked vehicle along that link. And those are great instances of where if that single vehicle is parked in the driveway, you would open up the full lane. So if you want to get super detailed, which I don't think that those exact numbers are in the report, but like the data is. So we didn't necessarily go through and identify every single road that like in the report and said this street has this, but it is in the data and it should be available. Is that right, Ian?
Yeah, I was just to reiterate, when we the maps that we present in the report, we normalized the number of vehicles or pinch points by the length of the street, because otherwise, you could have a very short segment with a lot of vehicles on it that wouldn't show up as, more constrained than a long segment with fewer. If you go into the appendix, we have the raw counts that we did during the survey, as well as the normalized numbers. And yeah, you could start with looking at where there's a low density of parked cars based on the maps, and then kind of dig into the appendix.
Great, thank you. The next comment is a follow-up from before. For your information, the 1990s study was published and is contained in an addendum in the book, The History of Kensington. Hopefully we don't do this again in 25 years and then have two prior studies that are completely ignored. This is a great point. We know there are a lot of recommendations that came out of the Oakland fire from a regional multi-agency study, and they weren't implemented. Now we're in kind of a different massive fire danger era, and let's hope with a correspondent that these are not. There's a question about whether setting up a citywide alternate solar grid for power, is that an option during fire season or red flag days? This may not be a traffic question, but if anybody wants to tackle it.
I'm all for creating microgrids for power. I mean, I think it's a solution. It has many co-benefits. I think it has the co-benefit of not having to spend a lot of money in terms of getting power lines underground. I think there's the benefits of just general taking load off the grid, not having that connection. And it still can connect to the grid, and that's fine. And it has a sustainability component too, which I think is incredibly important. In the resilience and sustainability space, there's a lot of actually conflicts where the benefit in sustainability is actually sometimes a negative for resilience, but microgrids are actually a great combination, which if there could be one of my top five recommendations for the entire state of California, that would be one of them.
Great. Well, it's a great question. Thank you very much. The next is to ask, does the network analysis account for the removal of the number of cars along routes closer to the exit as it calculates loaded intersections everywhere else? Do the lower nodes clear out as the households closer to El Cerrito evacuate at the same time the households uphill of Arlington? And I guess this probably plays in to our polygon study. And so maybe the chief would like to comment on that one, or Larry?
Well, as far as the polygons are basically the selective evacuation, it's basically designed that the neighborhoods or the nodes, whatever, the polygons that are closest to the emergency, which would typically, if we're talking fire, is going to be the upper, it's going to be the upper neighborhoods. Those are the ones that we evacuate first, and then basically work your way down as the, as fast as we can, because I'm not sure if I totally understood it right, if it was saying we do the downhill or we do the lower ones first, but basically, depending on where the emergency is located, the computer system will determine the neighborhoods that need to be evacuated first and put timelines on them, and that's how, we're going, that's how the plan is designed to work with Zone Haven.
Yeah, I could just pipe in that the my understanding is that the simulation that the Zone Alert software does, takes into account how much draining, how much the traffic is draining, and how much the drainage affects traffic ahead. So I think, yes, that is included in the simulation to generate the recommendation to the chief as to which areas to evacuate first.
And just to clarify for our study, the traffic counts are cumulative at those locations. So they just, they represent the total counts of cars, vehicles that will be passing through a given intersection or a segment. It doesn't account for when those vehicles are passing through that segment. Jeremy, if you have anything.
Yeah, you covered it, as echoed earlier. It doesn't account for, you know, congestion or delay or these other factors. It's more the total vehicle throughput that we're expecting.
That basically would be into your worst case scenario type thing, if everybody went at once.
Yes, if everyone went at once, yeah. And again, the scaling factors, that it's based on what the scaling factor we're using is. It doesn't actually change the routes taken. It doesn't readjust.
Okay, great. There's a question of whether there is a plan to make the intersection of Kenyon and Purdue safe. People coming up Kenyon often turn right into oncoming traffic on Purdue because of parked cars and foliage. I believe our public safety people are aware of this problem. Would you like to comment on this, Officer Harms or Chief Pagoni?
In regards to public safety, that's going to require an on-view police officer hiding in that area and conducting traffic enforcement. The three ways to improve, you know, traffic is education, enforcement, and engineering. Enforcement is only one third of the component. We can't be there all the time. If we get a traffic complaint of a specific time frame, maybe a specific, let's say Monday through Friday between 2 and 3, it's a problem. We can take enforcement action. No easy fix is my answer.
Thank you. The last question we have presently is this model premised on the notion that a Diablo Wind wildfire is giving the entirety of Kensington only 1 or 2 hours to evacuate the entire zone? Chief Pagoni, you've modeled this.
You mean modeling, I mean, as far as what the consultants did, I'm not sure what time frame that they used on it, you know, as far as getting people out. Again, the warning that we have, you know, and we do this over and over and over again, everybody wants a single answer that fits every single situation, and that's just impossible. We may have 1 or 2 hours, we may have 6 hours, we may have 30 minutes. It just depends where the fire starts, what the winds are doing, what the weather condition is. But as far as what the modeling, I mean, I'm not sure what time frame they use. So we can let Stephen or Jeremy or Ian, whoever did that, say what they used for the time frame.
So there isn't a specific time frame. Again, because this isn't a traffic simulation, this is using a network analyst tool for the facility in egress. So it doesn't give a specific time. It's more indicating generally dispersing the population, what would be the fastest route for them, ignoring other traffic. So again, this is to give us a general idea of what will be the most traveled routes and which ways people are most likely to go.
Okay, great. That's the end of the questions we have at present. Is there anyone else that has comments or follow-up before we turn it back to Julie to close the meeting?
You had a couple more come in, Kevin.
Oh, you're right, just now I see it. Okay, so the question is, there's a question about with a neighborhood, this is great. Then with, you know, a neighborhood, if you've got the problem on the street, how do you get the ball rolling to get my street safety improved? Who should I talk to first?
I guess you'd want to reach out to the police department initially, have a sit down consult, find out and identify what exactly is the problem or the concern. Then from there, if it is a PD viewpoint, then from there we can come up with an action plan. So reach out to me, Officer Harms at Kensington, I would guess.
And do you find that there's more leverage if you get a group of neighbors agreeing that we need some help here?
Yes, that has a lot more merit. It's not just one person who has a neighbor, has a gripe with his neighbor. It has a lot more merit and a lot more substance, and it puts it on a higher priority. There's certain things I can do and there's certain things I can't do, but I do need cooperation. And I have an excellent working relationship with the county already in regards to their responsiveness and getting curbs painted red and so forth. They've already come out. I've called them. They've come out and done some studies, and I've got some, you know, pretty quick results on a couple of items that were easy to fix. So reach out to me, and then from there, depending on the nature of the complaint, I can work with county on that.
Thank you. And we know that Chief Pagoni agrees that it always works better. No one wants to upset the neighbors, right? Well, it always works better when the neighbors agree that, you know, we ought to change the direction of parking on this street, or we ought to make it one way instead of two. That makes it a lot easier for them. So we'd really encourage neighbors to get together and try to agree on things and report that way. There's one final comment, I guess, about the timing of the fire. It depends, but the really catastrophic emergencies are known to be those of 1 or 2 hours. The slower or smaller events are easy. So we'll just thank you for the comment. And if there are no, thanks for all the work. Thank you. And we'd certainly like to echo that. We want to thank certainly all the consultants for coming here today, which is terrific, for giving us the report. And we asked them if you could just summarize executive summary. They gave us this beautiful 6-page summary. They've been very responsive to the questions. We have all the data that they very kindly turned over that can be used in facilitating further studies and articulating with the Polygon study, which apparently can handle these data and make their study even more fine-grained. And so we want to thank them. We want to thank Chief Pagoni and Officer Harms for coming along and for cooperating so much on this with us. We really feel like we're beginning to make some progress, and it's just been great. Larry, did you have anything else to say before we turn it back to Julie?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Officer Harms and Chief Pagoni for their attendance here. And I'd like to give a tremendous shout out to our three consultants who I think did a yeoman job in getting us started on the route towards evacuation. We've got a lot more to go, but it was a great study and there's a lot of good data there. So thanks to everyone on the panel. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we have one last question, just came in, whether there's a next step for deciding on recommended exit routes and then communicating those. We are gonna be on that in the coming weeks, clarifying and communicating. But you know, as Chief Simpkins said the other day, a lot of this is baby steps. You know, we can do a little at a time, and we don't have, as was recommended, a full-time dedicated paid person to ramrod this. So the recommendations are great for us in terms of taking the next steps forward to trying to make Kensington and surrounding areas a safer place. Let me turn it over to Julie, and thanks everybody for your patience and participation. And we had a great participation from our community, and we're really happy they all came. Thank you, Julie.
One brief comment that our next meeting of the Fire Board is this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. via Zoom. And I thought I'd try something that we haven't tried before, which is to unmute everyone, including all the attendees, so we can give all of you panelists a big round of applause. So let's see how it works. I can't hear it, so I don't know if it worked.
Hear, hear.
Here's a nice comment. Thank you. Thanking everyone very much. So with that, our meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Good luck, you guys.
Thank you.
Hope you like your jobs.
All right. Much appreciated.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.